SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Friday. Welcome to the weekend. Race fans, Sirius 219 XM 201 Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website too, which is also found online. It doesn't look great up here, but the weekend is going to be gorgeous and dry from what we can tell in the venues and the areas where we'll be focused. Starting, of course, in the Illadelph, in the Fa. Philadelphia is the focus, hard not to be, with the $2 million grade ones, the Pennsylvania Derby, and the Cotillion. I meant to say all week. The Cotillion is a tremendous name for a race. You should make a list of offbeat, you know, names that aren't necessarily, you know, directly connected. The Cotillion is a very cool name. Debutante is always I named a horse, Al Debutante, the Aldebaran filly that was problematic, but Debutante is a fabulous moniker for a race, but the Cotillion, it's got a certain connotation. A dance, you know, the form. A Cotillion is semi-formal, right? It's not, maybe it is a formal. We'll check into that. We're going to talk to any number of players and observers into the weekend, do some handicapping, cross-country pick four between the 7th and 8th. At Belmont, the Kelso being the 8th, the 7th is an allowance, and the two grade ones hook those four races up together. Not an easy task either, because the Kelso is tricky. It's a great weekend of racing. And to give you a couple of other places to be aware, I didn't get a chance yesterday really to lay out. We kind of broke running yesterday and didn't get to a few different things, but in addition, of course, to Pennsylvania and the Derby and the Cotillion and oh, Casey, look at that. Casey went to a Cotillion. Well, that's so sweet. He took that's so great. He took his cousin. That was so nice of you. And he wore a tux, so that's formal enough. The Gallant Bob, of course, as well, the Alphabet Soup, and the West Coast, the Pennsylvania Derby Champion Stake for older horses. Baffert, obviously, heavily invested here with Comebackers, with Collected and McKinsey. But there's so much, top to bottom. Outside of Parks' action, Laurel got a big weekend. And because of the storm and the rescheduling of particularly the Match Series Stakes and the pushback, you ended up with a very big 2 days at Laurel tomorrow and Sunday. The DeFrancis Dash, of course. You've got the Maryland Standards for two-year-olds, the Futurity and the Salima. You got the Laurel Dash, the Laurel Turf Cup, the All Along, and then all of the Virginia races that got moved to Sunday. So it's a really nice weekend of racing at Laurel if you have not had a chance. You also probably didn't get a chance to look at Charlestown. The Oaks is tomorrow, but in addition to the Charlestown Oaks, there is the accompanying stakes card, as usual, with all those nice $50,000 West Virginia bred opportunities. A very nice card at Charlestown. They always do a nice supporting on all their big days. And the Charlestown Classic and this card, if you haven't looked, I mean, they're every field is basically for the stakes, starting with the fifth, the Mercer, the 10 horse, you know, 10 horses, 10 horses, 8 horses, 10 horses, 10 horses, 10 horses, 10 horses, 9 horses in the Sadie Hawkins. Another dance. Everywhere you look. We got the Cotillion and the Sadie Hawkins. And I saw where I saw the first race tomorrow at Belmont. It's not really a dance, it's a party, but the Junkanoo. Chad Brown sends out a horse named Junkanoo tomorrow. So there's our theme, I guess. We'll see as we go through the week at action, we'll see how many party and dance tune words and names there are. But make sure you look at Charlestown, and it's an evening card, so that part of it makes it accessible if you're tied on to all the other action. Haven't even talked about Churchill yet. James Scully will be by later. He'll look at Churchill, and he also looked at Parks. Nick Tamaro, of course, will look at Belmont. You've got, in addition to the Kelso, you've also got the Gallant Bloom this weekend. You've got the Noble Damsel. You got tomorrow, you got, or Sunday, you got a couple of state bred events, the Ashley Cole, where Carafa runs for the sixth straight time. Dave Grenig will be here this hour. Got a bunch of things to talk about with Dave, including the somewhat disconcerting news from yesterday that the New York Gaming Commission has been asked to consider and approve, and they'll do this, they'll have a vote on Monday, jackpot bet concept for New York. And I mean, I don't think New York racing needs a jackpot bet. They're not, Dave O'Rourke was quoted by Matt Hegarty as saying it's not, they haven't committed to anything. There's no specific hard plan to institute one, but they want to have the option. And when it comes to approving wagering concepts in New York, it's a somewhat cumbersome system. And if the Gaming Commission were to approve the request, there would then be a 60-day comment period. And I am going to guess and imagine that there'll be plenty of opposition to this concept. I've said this. I mean, we've had these discussions for years since the growth of the Rainbow Six and the advent of these jackpot bets. It's gimmicky. It takes money out of circulation. There's way more things wrong about it than right. My feeling, and I feel like it's out of place in New York. We'll discuss it with Dave Grenig. The other part of this is that all you have to do is look back to Wednesday and to the monstrous pick six, with some of the tinkering going on in California with pick sixes. New York stands poised to basically become, you know, the last $2 pick six opportunity, and there's still plenty of room for that in today's landscape. And I know that Santa Anita, we'll talk to Hammer later too, they're going to tinker with their pick six during the upcoming meet. Feels like, you know, I don't know, this seems completely misguided. We'll see. We'll talk to Dave about it and get his input as well. I mentioned Nick will be here to do some handicapping. He was up at Toronto, of course, over the weekend. Jim Dunleavy will handle a lot of the Pennsylvania action, but there's a lot of things to talk about with Dunleavy, who covers the Mid-Atlantic. Marcus Hirsch has pitched in. He's going to handle Laurel with Dunleavy in Philly tomorrow. And DeRosa, of course, I mentioned Scully too, and Hammer. So full lineup. And after the first break, Alan Foreman is going to join us as the Match Series, which came back for this year and has been really hailed as a success. There were some, I guess there was, I don't know if you saw the little bit of little hurly burly yesterday over the some of the scoring details were a little confusing. So Alan will clear that up, but also talk about the reception of the Match Series for 2018, and they're already excited about coming back next year. This has been, it's been a home run, and the numbers, interestingly, that have accompanied the Match Series dates at the venues that were involved, Monmouth and Parks and Presque Isle and Delaware and Pimlico and Laurel and Philly. The handle, there were handle bumps. Every Match Series, the presence on the card. This was a big hit. And I don't know if you saw the, well, we only touched on it, I think, with Dick Powell the other morning. The handle at Presque Isle, as their meet winds down, they've had a banner year. And really have become a fixture, and not such a secret anymore. And that placement on the wagering menu, 5:30, some of those off days they run, they're getting attention. As Dick has explained to you, you know, all through the meet, field size has been, you know, has been good. The racing's interesting, and especially for people that like synthetic track. I mean, it's been a winner. So we got a full day ahead and full 3 hours into the weekend. And then as soon as Tina gets out of school, we will head for Philadelphia. And really looking forward to it. We were looking forward yesterday before we head to the break, and I guess I could do this with Grenick, but we were looking forward to the two jump races, and in the Entenmann, in the delicious coffee cake, hurdle steak, Arch Kingsley. And there's that rider again, Michael Mitchell. Took a spill in the Lonesome Glory. Should really get an update on that, because he seemed to be laying there a little bit. But Mitchell pilots Boss Man around wire to wire and wins the Entenmann, and then a absolutely terrific running of the Lonesome Glory. Zanjabil, well positioned throughout, and now he's well positioned to be the Eclipse Award winner. Ricky Hendricks sending out the Aussie Rules 5-year-old boy. He's going to be a handful. It's been a breakthrough year for him after coming to this country last year, won the Foxbrook at Far Hills. And seems like he's on his way to a championship for Mr. Mahoney and the Rose Bryan team. Meadow Run is partnered in there as well. Aussie Rules, 5-year-old Zanjabil, holds off Hinterland late and Optimus Prime, stablemate, to win the Lonesome Glory. Let's take a break. Alan Foreman starts us off. Always fun to talk to Alan. Weekend preview at the races here on SiriusXM.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on SiriusXM Radio. Daytime Southern California thoroughbred racing action continues in beautiful Orange County through our closing day Sunday, September 23rd, with the LA County Fair Thoroughbred Meet at Los Alamitos Racecourse. The exciting daytime racing action starts at 2 p.m. Pacific through Sunday afternoon. Our closing thoroughbred weekend is highlighted by the $100,000 Barrett's Juvenile on Saturday afternoon. Then Sunday's closing program will have a mandatory payout in the Pick 6, Pick 5s, and Super High 5. And remember, Los Alamitos now features a second Pick 5 wager featuring the final five races on the card. Plus, racing fans, don't forget that Los Alamitos is home to year-round nighttime racing Friday through Sunday nights.
top quarter horse mares will be in action in the Grade 1 Mildred Vessels Memorial Handicap this Sunday night. Join us on track or at your favorite satellite or ADW provider. There's always great racing at Los Alamitos Racecourse. For more, go to losalamitos.com.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Pennsylvania's breeding program is truly the most lucrative in North America. Now, we'll pay a 50% breeder award for PA-sired, PA-bred maidens who run first, second, or third, with 25% for non-PA-sired PA-breds. Last year, the number of mares bred rose by 15% in Pennsylvania. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing, this is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
I can't understand the people of the day. See each other down, or lift a hand their way. This has been going on for years and years. Humanity's a class lord on the first year.
We're back at the races. Not a bad intro, because Alan Foreman joins us. It is closing weekend for the Match Series. It's had a triumphant return. A little bit of a wrinkle arose yesterday in the scoring. Alan, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Thanks for having me back on.
Not at all. A great way to kind of tie it all together. Some of the divisions were already decided, and the reception to the Match Series was just overwhelmingly positive. It had a positive influence in the venues that came through. Talk a little bit about kind of tying it all up and looking forward to 2019.
Well, I think we're overall, I think we're very pleased. We had no idea what to expect. To me, it was somewhat like bringing back a sitcom that had been successful 15 years ago, like a Seinfeld, and trying to bring it back to a new audience. And you just don't know what the show's going to look like. You don't know how it's going to be received. You don't know about quality. And I think we were somewhat in that boat. And I think that the tracks, the horsemen's groups, everybody kind of just wanted to get their feet wet and see if this concept would work and whether we could pull it off. So we didn't go all out this time. We just put it out there. We didn't have a lot of money to work with, and we just thought we'd, let's see if we can recreate the series. And I think that we've been with some hiccups along the way, some of which are beyond our control, like weather. It was very, very successful. And, you couldn't ask for anything more than having what turns out to be a championship day at one of the tracks. It wasn't designed to be that way, although we had talked about it originally of doing all the championship races at one venue. But it turns out that Laurel tomorrow becomes the championship venue. And we've got three great races that are full fields, and we'll decide the championship. And it's good for me because the last time we did this 18 years ago, I went down to Colonial, because the two championship races, one was a Colonial, one was a Penn National, and I flew down. that actually decided the championship. It's easy for me this year. It's right here at Laurel. So, but no, we're really pleased, Stephen. You know, as you're an observer, you're somebody we embraced early on in the series to help us promote it. So, you know, we're going to be talking to a lot of people to get their views on what we did right, what we did wrong, and I'm optimistic we'll bring it back next year.
Give a quick
It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Daytime Southern California thoroughbred racing action continues in beautiful Orange County through our closing day Sunday, September 23rd, with the LA County Fair Thoroughbred Meet at Los Alamitos Racecourse. The exciting daytime racing action starts at 2 p.m. Pacific through Sunday afternoon. Our closing thoroughbred weekend is highlighted by the $100,000 Barrett's Juvenile on Saturday afternoon. Then Sunday's closing program will have a mandatory payout in the Pick 6, Pick 5s, and Super High 5. And remember, Los Alamitos now features a second Pick 5 wager featuring the final five races on the card. Plus, racing fans, don't forget that Los Alamitos is home to year-round nighttime racing Friday through Sunday nights. Top quarter horse mares will be in action in the Grade 1 Mildred Vessels Memorial Handicap this Sunday night. Join us on track or at your favorite satellite or ADW provider. There's always great racing at Los Alamitos Racecourse. For more, go to losalamitos.com.
Yeah, we're back. I guess that was, I thought we were having trouble with your phone, but it was me, turns out. So we're back. I asked you about the circumstance with the points. What happened there?
Well, I think there was just a misunderstanding in the piece that Tom O'Mara put out. You know, we've always had a bonus point structure going back to the original series to incentivize the horsemen to participate in the races. And with respect to this series, if you run a horse in more than three races in the division, and there are five races in each division, you get bonus points. And I think the misunderstanding yesterday was that the points don't apply to each additional race. So you get 5 points if you run in a fourth race, and then you get bonus points in the fifth race, you get an additional 2 points. So I think that was the misunderstanding with the bonus points, and somebody picked up on it yesterday. We got it straightened out and had to issue a correction, and it is what it is. But I guess the biggest disappointment, if you were to ask me what one of the biggest disappointments is in this series, is we started kind of late, and a lot of the horsemen didn't understand or didn't focus on it. And so there are horses in the series, some of whom are competing tomorrow, who will not get bonus points and actually will not qualify for bonus money because they didn't meet the requirement of having a minimum of three races in a division. And so some of the owners and trainers gave up substantial dollars by not realizing that they would not qualify. Or in some instances, we had a couple of trainers and horses that went to Saratoga or went elsewhere, have come back to the series, but it's too late and will not qualify for bonus money. So that's something going forward, I think, as more trainers understand and focus on it, we'll be able to do better in that regard.
Well, there is some divisions that are still up for grabs, and the overall championship that'll be decided. That Jessica Krupnik of Trey Abbott's had a terrific summer, and will win her division, but also poised to take the overall championship too.
Yeah, they're going to have to sit back, and it's out of their control. It's kind of like being the guy who finishes and goes to the locker room, the PGA Tour. He puts in the first score, and then he watches to see if it stands or not. So that's what's going to happen with Jessica Krupnik. Obviously, we had a star in the series, Paige McKinney, who was injured and retired. And Paige McKinney had really developed quite a following. And we would love to have seen what would have happened if Paige had stayed in the series. But Mary Epler, who trained Paige McKinney, has Oak Bluffs, who can win the series. And this has been a substantial series for Mary Epler. She figured it out early on. She targeted her horses for the series, and I think when her fellow horsemen see the kind of bonus money that she's earning out of the series, they will direct their attention the same way next year. We've got Lackey, the Maryland horse, Damon Diladavico, who's just been trooping through the series. Lewis Field, Jeff Runco's coming back, needs to run to qualify for the bonus money, and has a chance to win it. And there are a couple other horses. So there are a number of different possibilities for tomorrow, and we'll just have to see how it plays out. But from our perspective, that's what makes it work. There isn't anything like it in the industry.
Well, the action, the way things happened because of the storm and the postponement of the DeFrancis and the other weekend stake action at Laurel from last week makes for really a special kind of a weekend. And really, it's a little bit of a Mid-Atlantic celebration on a wider note, Alan, because the Virginia-bred races that the Maryland Jockey Club have so graciously maintained, with Virginia poised to resume racing next year at Colonial. And so now Sunday, you've got the Virginia Stakes that make for really a pretty special weekend at Laurel.
A special weekend at Laurel, and, you know, I want to tip my hat to the folks at the Parks, our colleagues at Parks, who also have a big day tomorrow, a great card. And it's great racing in the Mid-Atlantic, and it's great to see. And we're really pleased about it. You know, Steve, we started this series in the slop and in the rain at Pimlico. We couldn't have asked for a worse situation, and we got through it. And we didn't want to end the series with a hurricane last weekend. So we opted to move. The hurricane didn't get us. But, you know, we wanted to stay on the turf for the turf races, and we didn't want to be in the slop on the dirt, so that we could really contest these races in an even fashion. The races last week were fine, so we're real pleased about the ending.
Well, close to $500,000 in bonus money, and that to be distributed as things wind down. And one of the other storylines that I mentioned, Alan, as I noted your visit was upcoming, the handle bump that accompanied these events at the various circuits, and maybe one of the biggest success stories as we get through 2018 is Presque Isle Downs, that had their best year yet, and I think is escaping industry-wide notice.
Very successful at Presque Isle, but I was asked at the beginning of the series, you know, what are the barometers? What are the things you're looking for? And I said, bigger field sizes. And in fact, in convincing the tracks to come back into the series, we told them, you know, if we can attract one or two more horses to your races over previous years, you'll get money back. You'll easily get your money back, and it's a good investment. Well, you know, if you look at, obviously, Pimlico was hard because of the rain on Preakness weekend, but nonetheless, even with smaller fields, the handle was up in those races. But when we went to Delaware, a huge increase in handle in the two Delaware races. Monmouth was a mixed bag, but all in all, the handle did increase at the races at Monmouth. Penn Gaming, monumental increases on Governor's Cup Day. They were really pleased. And Presque Isle. So we really hit it out of the park with the quality of the races. I think we're going to revisit some of the divisions that I think we had trouble filling. It just, the horse population wasn't there. We'll get a better handle on the inventory. But I think we met the objectives. And, you know, we'll see what worked and didn't work. We're going to get back together again in October, and going to talk to a lot of people and get their thoughts on it, and hopefully we'll bring the series back, perhaps with some changes, but hopefully bigger and better than ever. It seems to have gone off very well. And from your perspective, Steve, you know, the media is different today than it was 18 years ago, and it's people like you who helped us to promote the series, and we really appreciate your support.
No, not at all. It was so much fun. One of those things that, you know, that you, when you announced it, it got immediate traction. And, you know, there were efforts like this going back, you know, toward the 90s, the Racing Championship Series, another example. And, you know, things that require coordination between track organizations. Obviously, the THA makes this a little bit easier in terms of bringing everybody together. But Alan, run down who's been involved, the what it took in terms of a partnership from the various track level and the horsemen and virtually, you know, 15 different players probably that made this happen.
Well, you've got the Maryland tracks, you've got Delaware, you've got New Jersey, Pennsylvania. All the track owners were all in, and they were terrifically supportive of the series. All of the horsemen's organizations, the THA organizations in Maryland, Delaware, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, you've got the HVPA, fabulously supportive in Pennsylvania, the breeders' organizations, because there are breeder bonuses. In New Jersey, in Maryland, in Pennsylvania. It really was a collective effort to make this happen, and just really pleased at the way everybody pulled together and supported the series in a way that made it work. And I have to give really special credit to David Richardson. He used to be with David Hayden Advertising, who originally did the creative work in the Match series back when we started. And who was now the executive director of the Maryland Thoroughbred Horsemen's Association. But he's done a lot of the creative work. And Tom O'Mara has done a terrific job with, I think, one of the best websites that we developed in the business. And people ought to take a look at matchseries.com to see what I'm talking about and Tom's writing on the series. None of us who ran this series took a dime. All the money went back into the series to make it work. So you really have to give credit to people who gave their time and their effort for no compensation just to try to do something for racing, in the Mid-Atlantic, and try to create some new energy and new excitement in the business.
You know, a success on all levels and by any matrix. And I wanted to include one side note before we wrap, Alan, and that is I retweeted the THA note, the kind of thing that happens on the backstretch and a health fair next Thursday at the Laurel Park Rec Room, 9 to 1, and spreading the news about this and making sure that everybody is aware, and I'm sure that those that are involved in Maryland racing virtually anywhere are welcome to attend, but all kinds of health screenings, flu shots and blood screenings, glucose measurement, diabetes, an issue very much on the backstretch, blood pressure, virtually everything that in terms of health services. This is a really nice initiative, and that want people to understand what the HBPAs, what the THAs, what they do. And this is a good example next Thursday, 9 to 1 at Laurel.
Yeah, this Steve, this is it's one of those stories that never gets told, but it's amazing what Maryland Thoroughbred Horsemen and most, if not all, the horsemen's organizations are doing it now. Do these health fairs for the people on the backstretch. It's amazing the lives that get saved, the issues and illnesses that get picked up that we end up dealing with. It's just one of the great things that these organizations do for the people who work on the backstretch. Of course, Maryland has a partnership with MedStar. It's one of these landmark health systems. We actually have our own health system in Maryland racing through MedStar. And, you know, Maryland is a good place to be if you're involved in the horse racing industry. It really, I was talking to the chairman of the Racing Commission in Maryland yesterday about what a good spot Maryland is if you're in the racing business.
Alan Foreman, THA, and the match series, which wraps up some divisions and the overall championship to be decided tomorrow. A terrific day of racing, and we'll touch base with Jim Dunleavy and hit some of the highlights from a handicapping standpoint. Alan, the weather's going to be all right, and this has been a big success. I was happy to help bang the drum for the awareness, and look forward to 2019. I appreciate the visit. Happy, healthy New Year, too, to you and the family.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you. Appreciate being on. Thank you.
Alan Foreman, who is just tireless and such a positive influence in so many different areas of the industry. Let's take a timeout here, 25 to the top. James Scully is going to jump in. We're going to flip-flop with Dave Grenig. Dave tied up until about 11, so we'll talk to Dave after we talk to Hammer later. And got quite a bit of news, not just the action on the racetrack coming up at Belmont this weekend, and, of course, looking forward to the fields coming together for Jockey Club Gold Cup and the two-year-olds, of course, the Demoiselle and the Champagne and etc. But we've also got that pick six, or at least the jackpot concept that Matt Hegarty wrote about. I want to get Dave's feedback on that. And, of course, Dave with the story this week that late will miss the Beldame, and see what else he's got on that front. So, and there was also a very sad piece of news that I'll let Dave discuss because he knew her best. A passing of a long time fixture at NYRA on the media front. We'll save that for Dave. And there was something else with Grenig. Oh, today, New York. Good news. We're on the turf. All four turf races today, 2nd, 6th, 7th, and 9th. You got a $31,000 carryover from yesterday's action. And yesterday got squirrely, and it is a very tough sequence today. Will not be shocked if you get a double carryover into Saturday, because I put up the sequence 6 by 10 by 10 by 9 by 8 by 11. I don't know. Very tough group of races today in this carryover. But we're back on the turf, and they're calling it yielding. We will yield here and come back with James Scully after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Daytime Southern California Thoroughbred racing action continues in beautiful Orange County through our closing day Sunday, September 23rd, with the LA County Fair Thoroughbred Meet at Los Alamitos Racecourse. The exciting daytime racing action starts at 2 p.m. Pacific through Sunday afternoon. Our closing Thoroughbred weekend is highlighted by the $100,000 Barrett's Juvenile on Saturday afternoon. Then Sunday's closing program will have a mandatory payout in the Pick 6, Pick 5s, and Super High 5. And remember, Los Alamitos now features a second Pick 5 wager featuring the final five races on the card. Plus, racing fans, don't forget that Los Alamitos is home to year-round nighttime racing Friday through Sunday nights. Top quarter horse mares will be in action in the Grade 1 Mildred Vessels Memorial Handicap this Sunday night. Join us on track or at your favorite satellite or ADW provider. There's always great racing at Los Alamitos Racecourse. For more, go to losalamitos.com.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Pennsylvania's breeding program is truly the most lucrative in North America. Now, we'll pay a 50% breeder award for PA-sired, PA-bred maidens who run first, second, or third, with 25% for non-PA-sired, PA-breds. Last year, the number of mares bred rose by 15% in Pennsylvania. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfertello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing, this is At the Races with Steve Bick on SiriusXM Radio.
Maybe I'm foolish, maybe I'm blind, thinking I can see through this and see what's behind. Got no way to prove it, so maybe I'm lying. But I'm only human after all. I'm only human after all. Don't put your blame on me. Don't put your blame on me.
We're back at the races.
Look in the mirror.
About 20 minutes to the top. And as James Scully joins us, I want to slip in a result from yesterday at Churchill, because there was a race that we kind of were watching more because of something over the summer, and that was the Wayne Catalano visit, you'll recall, and we talked about Leora at that time. Leora came back after her Saratoga run, and she turned up in that third race yesterday at Churchill. There were the split division races 3 and 6 that both went a mile on the turf for the two-year-old fillies, and fascinatingly, Leora ran okay. She ended up third in here as the favorite, but she yielded to a couple of stalkers. And No Mo Temper, the Uncle Mo filly for Mark Stanley and Mark Cassie. And this was a third career start for No Mo Temper that had been spending her summer at Ellis. Well, then, an hour and a half later, 2 hours later, here comes the other division, and Norm Cassie wins this one. So father and son sweep the divisions. This was Belle Laura. She went off as the favorite, and she ran very well. They got similar figs, 65 for No Mo Temper, 63 for Belle Laura. But what's interesting is they both came out of the same race at Ellis. That was the August 10th maiden group where Lights, Camera, Action won for Kenny McPeak and Walking L. And McPeak then turned around with Lights, Camera, Action and tried in main track and was third in the Pocahontas, a distant third, obviously, behind runoff Serengeti Empress. But keep an eye on this race. No Mo Temper was second in there. Belle Laura, it was her debut. She was fifth. There's also a horse by the name of Italian Summer for Cassie. And Vicky Oliver has got Artistic out of this race. So just, you know, one of those interesting circumstances where, you know, horses obviously were productive. Italian Summer for Tracy Farmer and Cassie failed actually at a short price subsequently, just yesterday in that race. But Artistic, taking a look at what Artistic did, Artistic tried Kentucky Downs and kind of ran evenly, may not have cared for the undulation. But keep an eye out of that race. August 10th, the Ellis Park 7th. James Scully, good morning.
Yeah, we'll keep an eye on that race for sure. And I'll just say, you know, Noam Cassie doing a really good job with young horses. He had a 2-year-old Distorted Jimmy won at like 11-1 on Saturday, the opener. He's coming out of that race against Hog Creek Hustle at Ellis. So, yeah, definitely a good 2-year-old trainer. And I like a Vicky Oliver horse today, Steve. I mean, sometimes we see these barns and look at Asmus in the first few weeks of Saratoga, where they just get all the horses lined up properly for a meet. And, you know, Vicky Oliver, she's run 3 maidens. She's got 2 wins. High Regard was a really nice-looking winner. She had like a 41-shot run third to Covfefe. So it looks like her horses are pointing to this meet. And like I said, she's 2 for 3, and she's got a horse in the sixth race today, Lake Nakuru, an Animal Kingdom gelding that came out and ran second to Pole Setter, who came back and ran third in the Iroquois for Brad Cox. And we're just, you know, he was wide on both turns, in between horses. That race set up perfectly for the winner, but really was battle gamely. Was a little bit green in the stretch, but was a clear second. And going to post two with Morales, who's riding well, I really like Lake Nakuru today in the sixth race.
Sixth race goes off at 3:16 at Churchill today, and it's actually, you know, I had only casually glanced at this card, but you got a good allowance, second level allowance, as
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up with ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
We're back, and I think we're having some instability issues with my line, but we'll get James back right away. And what I was asking him, see if he has any ideas in the second half of that that split division, the mile turf race today. Yesterday was the girls, today the boys, and the 10th race has got what looks to be a nice group. And you can tell from the morning line with four horses between 3-1 and 4-1. So in terms of the inscrutability of this race, most of the horses have had an opportunity to run. You do have a couple of firsters, Rudy Brissett, Bluegrass Parkway, and Fast Data for Dale Romans are firsters, and James Scully back. James, I was just asking about the second division of that group that you talked about with Lake Nakuru for Vicky Oliver. Looks like a competitive group in the nightcap today, too.
Yeah, definitely, Steve. It really is. I was very intrigued by that Just War, you know, the Declaration of War for Brendan Walsh. I've seen some of those, his offspring run pretty good. And, you know, that was had an inside trip that day at Kentucky Downs, and just expect him to move forward. Brian Hernandez riding well at Churchill as well.
Well, that gives rise to the weekend. Let's talk about Saturday and Churchill. After the big weekend last weekend, of course, the Locust Grove, the Open Mind, and the two-year-old events, we just have the Dogwood in terms of stakes, and it's a listed stake these days. But for 100,000, it really drew a competitive group, and it's a nice sequence tomorrow, the late action.
Yeah, and the Dogwood, it got a field of 11 three-year-old fillies in there. It's interesting, the morning line favorite, Figueroa's Queen. She was eased last time in Alabama and draws a perhaps a tough rail post there with Sean Bridgmahan for Brad Cox. I mean, I'm against her in this spot. I'm really against the favorites in this race, Steve. I took a hard look at number 5, Miss Mimosa, who's 8-1 with Ricardo Santana making her stakes debut for Belmont. Her race two starts back. Just thought she really caught a speed favor in track that day, that Hayfield, you know, led wire to wire, and really came back and ran an improved effort last time. I thought that was a real sharp allowance win on August 23rd, and she could sit and pounce in this spot. But I'm going to give the edge in the Dogwood to number 3, She's Our Fastest, who's 10-1 on the morning line. Scott Jonah has bought up a stable from Evangeline this September, Steve, and had a wire-to-wire winner at 16-1 land battle the other day. And this thing, She's Our Fastest, comes out of a, I thought, was a really, really solid effort that Our Majesty ran second into Vertical Oak in the Preakness Stakes last year, and then went on the shelf for Ron Moquette, came back, won an allowance at Oaklawn Park. She was in the open mind last Saturday against Vertical Oak and Stroll in the Park and those fillies. So that was a really nice older distaffer that She's Our Fastest squared off against last time. And in fact, if you just draw a line through her two-turn efforts, her last two races at a mile or less, she's got a 94 and a 96 sprint speed rating. Those are the best numbers in the field. You know, could be a little bit overlooked shipping in from the Midwest, and I think She's Our Fastest could surprise, run a big race from just off the pace.
Nice. You know, back to Figuarella's Queen, who I was incredibly disappointed with in when it came to the Alabama. I thought her going a mile and a quarter with her breeding, being out of the read and by Medaglia d'Oro, I thought she was really primed to perform. And she attended the pace, which was absolutely not the idea. I was astounded with what whether that was. I can't remember. I did talk to Cassie afterward, and I can't recall at this point what he said, but I was so surprised when she was up near the pace, when the idea was to sit mid pack and you know, gallop along and then come with one run. Brad Cox's numbers with turnbacks is astounding. He's winning at close to 40%.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And I would have liked to have seen her draw a better post. I mean, perhaps she'll be able to overcome that rail draw, sit behind him and pounce. We saw last week and with that Cairo Cat in the Iroquois, he sat on the inside every step of the way behind horses and then, you know, ran huge in the stretch. You know, tight 10 to me got a little bit tired and switched leads and looks a little suspect going two turns. But it's a little can work out a trip. You got to respect her, like you said. He's awesome. I mean, Brad Cox just is 30% with that route to sprint move. And this filly ran a really big race over the track as well back in June. So I'm not totally discounting her chances. I'm not keen on her at short odds, Steve.
Fair enough, and She's Our Fastest, 10-1, and I can't argue. You mentioned that race that Figuarella's Queen ran at Churchill, and that came with Sean Bridgeman, so reunited with Bridgemo as well. So we'll keep an eye on her. Quick note, any thing you got out of the maiden races? There's 3 of them tomorrow, and they all look kind of interesting. You got Phillies split divisions, the 5th and the 8th, and you got boys going 7/8. These are older boys, but there may be some horses with upside here.
Yeah, and there was a filly. I went back and watched that race at Evangeline on August 9th with Katie's Value in race number 8, the non-horse. That's a Scott Gellner, like I said. That filly showed good speed that day from an inside post. I love the draw outside after, you know, being on the rail last time and having them do on the front end. She wound up 10 lengths clear third in that spot. She's, you know, by Kentucky bred by State Thurston, got a 77 speed rating, very respectable. So in a field where you have, like, horses for, you know, Will Marciano and others, you know, could be a little bit overlooked in there. Katie's Bayou in race 8.
Katie's Bayou, very good. And that allowance that I mentioned, or noted the ninth. You got a big full field of 12 with some hard hitters, Phillies and Mares, going 6.5, 59-2 starts the pick five. A nice card at Churchill tomorrow, highlighted by the Dogwood. Some thoughts about Parks and what you came up with for Cotillion.
Yeah, definitely.
And
well,
Derby.
You know, you look at these two races, they're both $1 million. They're the last, like, dirt route races, major races for three-year-olds of the year. And they both have had a huge impact on the Breeders' Cup. I mean, the Pennsylvania Derby in the last 5 years has produced a Breeders' Cup Classic winner, a Breeders' Cup Classic runner-up, and a Breeders' Cup Classic third placer. So, I mean, to me, you know, once again, you better get some of these horses, you know, Hofburg and McKenzie are, you know, have serious aspirations this fall for their connections. And obviously with the Cotillion, having Songbird and Untappable and others, you know, you have the best filly in training with Monomoy Girl. I just think that, you know, I look at Hofburg, it's his first graded stake, you know, since June. He missed the Travers with an illness, a late runner. And he also likes to be outside of horses. And I don't know if that blinkers on from post two is really going to benefit Hofburg tomorrow, Steve. And McKenzie, very talented. Baffert's talked about how time off allowed him to grow into his frame. And, you know, you have to like the fight he showed in multiple starts. But this is a tough spot to come back at a mile and an eighth for this son of Street Sense. I'm going to look for him to move forward off that race, and I'm going with Mr. Freeze. I don't see a lot of speed in this race, Steve. I know that this horse didn't make his debut till late April. You know, ran into a nice horse that day, Ford Peck, came back on a salty allowance that included Limation, who just rolled in Super Derby. That Iowa Derby, when I previewed the West Virginia Derby on here, he had a real troubled trip that day that doesn't show in the comment lines, where he was forced to steady behind a weaving foe in front of him and had another foe leaning all over him. And then last time in that West Virginia Derby, just really impressive the way he drew off in the stretch. And what really got me was after that race, reading the quotes from both Dale Romans and Robbie Alvarado, where they were both just like, yeah, this is a good race, but we haven't seen anything yet. This horse is just scratching the surface. And one thing about the Pennsylvania Derby, it did get a good-sized field, but there's not a lot of speed in there. I just think Mr. Freeze is going to the front. He might not be 12-1 like he is on the morning line, but I think he's going to be difficult to run down in the stretch.
I can't argue about the lack of real pace, and really the Cotillion could make the same case. Monomoy Girl.
Yeah.
I mean, there's the one there. There's the, you know, there's the long shot that has
Jump
a presence. Yeah.
The other ones have no chance whatsoever. Monomoy Girls could just canter on the front end. I mean, she, regardless of what Jump Brewer does, it looks like she's got these horses just over a barrel. I take a look at Separation of Powers and went back with some of her races, but I just don't think she can beat her, or any of these horses can beat Monomoy Girl.
Fair enough. Anything else at Philly?
Yeah, well, you know, I'm going to give Seven Trumpets. You know, there's a horse he's run at a one-turn distance six times. He's got three wins in 3 seconds. That was a really, I think that effort was really pretty strong last time. Looked like he was in huge trouble in the stretch and battled gamely to be second behind a major contender for the Breeders' Cup Sprint. You know, just to run in the Southwest Sunland Derby in Lexington just didn't make any sense. I mean, not only is Angel of Trumpets his dam, a 5-furlong like stakes winner, but she's like out of a bone trick mare. I mean, he's bred for speed on top and bottom. I think 6 furlongs hits him perfectly between the eyes, and he's improving and could be a little overlooked.
Knowing that you've got plenty of options in the Pennsylvania Derby and the likely narrow approach in the Cotillion, that's a fun group that came together in the Gallant Bob. So, and
it really
actually,
is. I mean, and engaged, you know, to me, just, I mean, it's just, I can't play. I'm glad he's in there, but losing ground in the stretch like he has, it's a real negative. Frenzy Fire obviously, you know, worries me. I mean, it's a nice horse, but, you know, if he doesn't fire his best effort at 6 furlongs, like you said, there's several in here. I mean, I looked even at, you know, Cassie's horse, that Noble Commander. I think that horse, you know, turned in a couple of sneaky efforts in the spring and coming back off a layoff, he's got some tactical speed and an outside post, and it's a little interesting.
I don't disagree at all about Noble Commander and still having fun. What has he done wrong?
Right. Yeah, exactly. I mean, he's going to be looking to mow him down late, and really a hell of an effort in that Woody Stevens get back.
Well, it's a good group. You know, the horse that's going to get overlooked in here is Miguel Vera with Forced, the two. I'm trying to think who was the Philly based sprinter maybe 3 years ago in this race that emerged, and he had the exact same look as this horse.
Mm-hmm.
You got the Gallant Bob. Let me pull up some Gallant Bob results, and it'll jump off the page.
Yeah, I think he ran at. I don't know who you're talking about.
Come on. There we go. Gallant Bob Stakes. There we go. I'll tell you. It's got to be 3 years ago. Past winners. And the winner is Trouble Kid was certainly one for Navarro and Preciado. And the year before, there it is, Favorite Tale. Another one, like one of these local parks horses that,
didn't
you know,
place in the Breeders' Cup in the sprint, like third or something. I don't know.
He was third, absolutely. Favorite Tale.
Yeah.
You bet. The Pennsylvania bred.
Yeah.
But if I'm not mistaken, this was his. This was, I think, his breakthrough. His breakthrough performance, and he was 7-2, but it was a 7-horse field, and he beat Fast Anna that day.
Right, he was coming off a big effort in the King's Bishop Alan Jerkins Memorial. Yeah, for
Reed Baker. Was Reed Baker?
No. The who had Mucho Macho Man?
Kathy Ritvo.
Yeah, Kathy Ritvo.
There you go. Well. Because Philadelphia is such a quirky surface, and because plenty of horses show up and just don't run, the locals that have got form deserve a second look. So that's my only proviso in a group like this.
Yeah, it should be a fun race, and you know, with Collected, I'm really I really hope he comes back rolling. You know, this name changer is a little bit interesting. You know, I like Alan Goldberg and Pennsylvania Parks. He's, you know, this horse is 3-for-5 with the second, so Uncle Moon, 5-year-old. But to me, if Collected runs real big tomorrow, he's going to take the money in the Breeders' Cup Classic. So I'm sort of like. Looking down the road at, like, you know, being against him at Churchill.
Well, it should be a terrific day. We'll be at Philadelphia and looking forward to it. James, always appreciate it. And I know you played some golf last week. How'd you hit him?
Yeah, I played okay. You know, if I could chip and putt, I'd be halfway decent, Steve.
Well, that's nothing some time at, you know, around a practice green won't fix, so. Get
all right,
it.
Steve. Well, hey, looking forward to this weekend and then two major Breeders' Cup prep weekends to come. So, real exciting time for horse racing.
Absolutely. James _ Scully 111 on Twitter, and James at the blog roll on Twin Spires, Brisnet. And James will have suggestions for you. And. Along with the entire staff that does such a great job. Let's take a top of the hour break, come back. Nick Tamaro, he was in Toronto last week. He was traveling, so we didn't talk to him, see what he thinks about Belmont tomorrow, Kelso and the Noble Damsel, but also important to get a look at that seventh race, which ties in with the cross-country pick four. So we'll do some of that with Nick next, James Dunleavy and Ed DeRosa, Hammer and Dave Grenig. Weekend preview here, SiriusXM at the races. Stay with us.
latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't.